kind of half-man crew. We've got myself, we've got Justin Wilson, and we've got a special superstar guest that accounts for the remainder of us. JJ will probably be joining a little bit later. For now, we've got Rick Harnish. Is that proper?
That's correct. Yes.
All right. Excellent. So Rick is a guy that knows very little about WISP, but he's here to talk to us anyway. I know. Justin and Rick go way back, so I'm going to let them do most of the talking, which is great. Apparently, Rick was in dire straits at some point and was desperate enough to actually call Justin to come and work for him. So, you know, the guy's got a kind of a wild streak on him. But seriously, Rick, he's one of the old schoolers in the WISP industry, and then eventually thought it would be fun to create an organization surrounding WISPs, and I guess to help further our cause, which is WISPA. And I know I'm going to butcher anything I say about it, so I'm just going to turn it over to you, Rick, and let you kind of tell us about your pedigree and your just what you do with WISPA. What's WISPA all about?
Well, hey, thanks. I guess I am an old-timer in the industry. I started in 1997. So, Greg, I might have forgotten more about the industry than you know about it.
Probably than I'll ever know about it, is what you mean to say.
It's been crazy. It's been fun. A lot of the equipment we used to use, obviously we were making that equipment ourselves. It was illegal to make it like that. But it's nice to see that the manufacturers are producing good equipment now that it's legal to use and so forth. So, and yes, I did hire Justin to come climb some towers. We used to call him Drops a lot. That was his nickname. I'm now the executive director of WISPA. WISPA started in 2004. We put a founding board together and spent, 9 months putting together the bylaws. And I think that first year we might have had 20 members. In 2005, we started with 20, maybe 30 members. That grew to around 200 in 2010. And just last week, we added 23 new members last week. And we're probably pushing 650, something like that. So we've grown 3x in the last 2 years. Part of that's due to the trade shows that we're putting on, like WISPAPALOOZA and ISP America. WISPAPALOOZA is coming up October 22nd, 26th. It's in Las Vegas all week. It's combined with the Ubiquiti Air Max show. And I'll go into more detail later. And then ISP America is a spring show. And our plan with that show is to move it around the country so that we can touch more wireless ISPs that cannot travel. Don't want to leave their networks, can't afford to travel, whatever. And this next April, I think it's the first week in April, it will be in the Midwest. So we have a large membership in the Midwest, and we like to touch them the best we can.
That's cool. So I know a big part of WISPA is about education, and obviously that's, I'd like to say that's why we started doing this podcast, but in earnest, we started this just so that our friends could hang out. And I know the WISP is obviously, you know, with the trade shows and everything, that's a great opportunity for guys just to get together and hang out in the industry. This is kind of the only, one of the few places I actually feel at home is talking to guys like you. And so tell us a little bit about kind of the education aspects that you guys really get into.
Well, we've tried to focus the agenda, and it's basically a three-day agenda. We have a business track, a marketing track, a technical track. Obviously, we can't do without a technical track. And then we have some sessions on regulatory issues as well. I'll pull up the agenda. So, Monday, the 22nd, is the Ubiquiti Air Max conference, like I said. Then Monday night, Cambium is having a reception. It's Monday Night Football. It'll be out at the pool. And then Tuesday, we kind of open the event with some a welcome and opening comments, housekeeping type items. Then we go into a session we call speed dating. Yeah, it sounds weird, but speed dating has become a very popular session at our events. Basically, everybody comes into the room and sits down at a table, and then the moderator, they tell everybody around the table about themselves. And, you know, you got 500, 600, 700 people in the room. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, the moderator says, okay, everybody with a blue shirt, stand up and move, or something like that. He's got some funny questions that he asks. And so everybody kind of moves around, shifts tables, sits down with another group of people, introduces themselves. They talk. Maybe they talk about a certain topic that time. But the feedback's been very good. It's a nice way, especially for, you know, if you're coming to an event for the first time, to meet a bunch of people in a hurry. It looks like JJ might be coming.
Yeah.
Here's JJ.
Hey, JJ.
Hello, guys.
Mr. Boyd, we are right in the middle talking to Rick about...
Yeah, I was watching you for a couple of seconds.
Just see where to jump in. So he's talking about kind of the different events that they're having out there. And he was just talking about speed dating.
Yeah. So it's just a networking of kind of an icebreaker, if you might have it. Then it looks like Jack Unger, who is has written a book on how to build a WISP back in 2001, I believe, published by Cisco Press. And he's our FCC chairman for WISPA, and he's also on the board. And he's doing a session with Steve Curran, who's the WISPA attorney, and they're just going to go over some of the issues that WISPA's battling in Washington, D.C. inside the Beltway as far as spectrum, CAF funding, and all sorts of different things. So it's just kind of a summary of what WISPA's doing inside the Beltway.
That's cool. And I thought that was something really interesting is that you guys are trying you are working with the FCC to help push WISPs in the right direction, you know, help with spectrum issues. And I don't really know of any other organization that really even knows what a WISP is, let alone is fighting for them.
Yeah, that's really the key reason there is a WISP, is the lobbying efforts. The educational value came after the lobbying efforts, actually. As we grew and our members asked for trade shows and conferences, that's when the educational value came in.
What are you seeing, Rick, for the, you know, WISP is adding these members. Are they new startup WISPs mainly, or is there any rhyme or reason to who's joining? Or
I've been doing an awful lot of research. You know, we've got a database of probably 1,700 to 1,800 wireless ISPs in the United States, Canada, and mainly Mexico. A lot of those companies that we had identified, we did not have contacts for.
Okay.
So, you know, whether I'm doing who is on the domain or just research on Google, trying to find a contact that we could clip on in the database that I can send an email to. A lot of them are existing WISPs that maybe never heard of WISPA or didn't realize what we did. I really think the trade shows and the conferences we're doing now, WISPA and ISP America, I think that's driving membership quite a bit. Obviously, a member is going to get a discount of $100 per person to attend the conference over a non-member. So if our membership dues are $325 a year and you're sending two people, your dues for that first year is only $125. it's kind of a no-brainer, really, especially if you go to multiple events a year.
Yeah. I think, and that approach is great, because I know most of the people that watch this, or at least feedback-wise, they're new, you know, and they're just looking for education, and, you know, they pay their dues, they go to the conference, they get the education, but the bonus is the money they're paying in is actually helping to lobby, which improves their quality of life. So it's a win-win, I think.
Yeah, there's no other group that is fighting for the WISP industry like WISP is. At least I don't know of any, and if there is one, I haven't been told about it. So, yeah, I mean, you mentioned that the young WISP or the startup WISP, we've targeted some of the sessions at WISPapalooza specifically for them. There's a session called New WISP Only, Question and Answers, Learning the Ropes Before They Hang You. and that's going to be a panel discussion, and it's going to have wireless ISPs that have been there, done that, so that they can let the new WISP ask questions, and then they can kind of give them good feedback.
What's the worst mistake you made that you look back on, and you know, when you're first starting up?
Hiring Justin Wilson.
Almost my downfall.
No. Justin's excellent. The worst mistake I made, every day when you're a startup WISP, you're making mistakes. I know a good story. I don't know that this is a mistake. Yeah, it is, kind of. I had a tower. I probably wasn't in business 6 months, and I had a lightning storm, and lightning hit the tower. And I was using, crap, now I don't even remember. What was before Proxim?
SkyPilot?
No.
Backlog. I know you used to use a lot of CarlNet.
I'm thinking of the hardware platform that was on.
Before Proxim.
AP1000s.
Those were ubiquity, weren't they?
No.
Are those like Ingenious, maybe? Or
Not AP1000. Whatever. Waypoint.
Tarango?
Lucent.
Oh, the Orinco, weren't they?
Lucent.
Yeah.
So this really dates me, because when this is before Orinoco even, Lucent came out with the bronze cards, and the bronze cards were PCMCIA. You slid them in the waypoint 2, and they had a capacity of 2 megabit total. 2 megabit. So then they came out. Well, I took this lightning strike, and I couldn't get any more bronze cards. So, you know, I had already started transitioning to silver and gold cards, which were 5.5 and 11 megabit. So I took this lightning strike. I had 2 megabit cards in my base station and replaced it with a silver or a gold card. I don't remember which. And I had probably 30 clients on that system. And I didn't have any clients. I mean, I replaced all the gear. I replaced the cable. You know, what's going on? This was going on 2 or 3 days. Well, this was, 1999? Something like that. And funny thing was, I actually called the vendor and said, is it possible for the energy from the lightning strike to go out through the radio waves and fry the cards 2 or 3 miles away? And they, you know, no, I don't think so. You know, nobody knew anything back then. Well, it come to find out that the bronze cards that were in my client devices would not talk with the new silver cards or the gold cards.
Nice.
But I didn't know that then. That's probably the funniest mistake that I ever made.
So you are human.
Yes, most definitely. Still make mistakes every day. Justin's just agreed to participate in a session that it's also kind of targeted to new WISPs. It's called New Easy Maintenance by Optimized Design. And it's going to focus on, like, tower construction techniques, so that you can, something breaks, it modularized design, I guess. You know, you go off and you replace. Getting a bunch of feedback.
Yeah, that's better.
You replace a device that got fried or whatever, and it's quick and dirty, and you're down the tower, and everything's working again. I know Justin's done a lot of work with tower boxes, and I kind of started modularizing my tower boxes back in, I don't know, 2003 or 2004. Standardizing and modularizing, it really helps. And then I got a tower climber that used to be one of my employees that is also going to be on the panel. And
good.
He is excellent. You know him, Justin Lee. Yep. When I hired him, probably 2004, it was just amazing what he did to our network as far as cleaning up the sloppy workmanship and so forth. And our network performance increased dramatically, and I think Lee's got a lot of good insight on how to help people that may not know how to put things together well, especially 300 feet in the air, and safely, and using the right tools. I mean, this guy's built five airplanes, he's built dune buggies, he's built choppers, motorcycles. It's just kind of amazing what he can do. So he's going to be a good addition to that panel. We have a session called Under Promising and Over Delivering, also kind of focusing on the young startup WISPs. And that's one of the things I see with a lot of, and I've seen this over the years, a lot of startup wireless ISPs. They got big eyes. They're going to take over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Don't care who's in their way. And a year later, you know, they're not that much bigger than what they were. And I'd rather focus on, you know, don't get your eyes so big. Tell your customers what you can do conservatively, and then give them more.
How many customers did you install, JJ, at like a negative 89 when you first started out? I know I installed a bunch, you know. Hey, they got a signal. I can do this.
Well, on some of the 900 meg Transio stuff we delivered, deployed early on, or it was kind of in the middle so far of the entire project. A lot of neg 89, I would think, oh, yeah, you know, I got a signal, I can make it work, and I'm getting, you know, 200K while I'm here, which at the time was, you know, better than nothing. you know, that's a lot of the attitude these people have. It's like, well, if you cut down that tree, and then we wound up with tree guys on staff, basically. It's like, how did this happen?
I got Paul Bunyan on staff.
Yeah, I really do, almost. We got these guys that we use a lot in different towns because we have a very large geographical footprint. So in the different, like the different counties, like we're basically in like seven counties around here, and part of an eighth one that we're working on. And so in each one of these counties, we basically have a tree guy that we'll use. But who knew, you know, in the beginning that, not only was I going to have to hone these skills as a network admin and and seeking, you know, tree climbers and finding people that were good at just climbing things that I was incapable of. So it's amazing what we've accomplished, all of us, in the short time that we've been doing this stuff. And it's all, you know, basically paid for out of pocket by the owners initially, and just one hand feeding the next, so it's a very lean business.
Yeah,
so.
I think every successful WISP owner has a bit of MacGyver in them. Oh. You know, you've you make it work with what you have, because money's not an option. You don't have money, so therefore it is not an option. So you just got to make it work. And I've seen some of the most amazing, most horrifying looking things come from people in the West. I love it. But I've seen some. JJ's over there laughing. I've seen some Frankenstein stuff come out of his shop.
You see it mid production.
It's a prototype. Somebody once told me a temporary fix is the most permanent solution.
Yeah.
Because you put something in temporary and it ain't never coming out.
Hey, you can look at it right now. It's reporting perfectly. I can tell you the battery voltage on a telephone pole out in the middle of nowhere.
It's neither here nor there, JJ.
It works perfect.
That's excellent. Well, I mean, it sounds like what you're basically describing for the new guys is do it right the first time, have a good game plan, and move into it. And I think that's hard to teach people.
It not necessarily do it right, but have the sense to learn from others that have done it before and made those mistakes. Let them teach you. And that's what I love about the WISP industry. It's such a sharing industry. I just love my job because I see people benefiting not only from WISP membership, that's the sideline here, but just the interaction, like this show right here. You guys are helping people around the world with your history and your background, and I'm thrilled to be a part of it here tonight. So.
Yeah, I don't know how many times I've, you know, either had to call a neighboring WISP or, you know, we got a pretty good group here in Indiana. Rick can say that. But, you know, I don't know how many times, you know, somebody's called up somebody, hey, man, you know, I got a tower fried. I need this and that. And, yeah. You know, I need some help. And, you know, Comcast isn't going to help AT&T.
Yeah.
Most likely not.
No. And I tell you what, it's almost like I know these JJ, Justin, and Andrew, they're not friends to me. They're almost like family. So at any time, if any of these guys ever need anything, I drop what I'm doing and I help them. You know, and I almost have the sense that if Justin wasn't too busy, I could pay for a plane ticket and he'd fly down here and fix something for me.
Oh, yeah, I'd be on a plane ticket in a moment.
I'm sure he would expect me to take him to the bar afterwards. But I've never developed friendships and relationships like this in any other real portion of my life. It's crazy, just the quality of people that I find in here. Maybe it's just that they're so, I guess, similar in mind frame to me. And I just kind of, the rig it guys, make it work, make it happen.
I don't know. We're also having an OSHA session. We're going to have an OSHA person come talk about, you know, how to be safe when you're climbing roofs and climbing towers and so forth.
I have a good story about that.
Okay.
We were on site one time. It was a 180-foot tower, and we had a climber. I don't know. He was all rigged out. I mean, he was safe. But the ground crew, you know, we were not exactly as safe as we could be, you know, no hard hats, no this, no that. You know, we weren't being dumb about it. We weren't, like, standing under him looking up. Everything, you know, goes back to a winch and goes up diagonally to the top. But still, we had some OSHA individuals show up and give us a quick and dirty lesson on
everything you're doing wrong.
Everything we're doing wrong, and basically cost us a good sum of money. So,
I'm guessing it would have been a lot less to buy the proper safety gear than the fire.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it would have been a much better experience for us.
Well, yeah, starting a WISP is a challenge, but let's be realistic. You're starting a business, and businesses have to follow rules, and we just want to help the startup guys learn the rules that they need to follow. And it's the rules might seem like a pain in their rear, but they're there to protect people and protect people's lives. And, you know, a lot of WISP are young people or young guys, you know, 25 to 40 years old. They have children at home, and we don't want any of them getting hurt. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, like the guy flipping burgers at McDonald's, if he screws up and puts ketchup on your hamburger and you didn't want it, it's a big deal, right? You know, yeah. A guy falls off a tower, that's a big deal.
Yes, it is. It's bad for the industry, too. Oh, yeah. I mean, the press that comes out of things like that, it really is. It makes it more difficult for us to accomplish things in D.C. or make a name for the industry when guys are out there being renegades and think they're better than God and they can do whatever, and they're not. That's all there is to it.
And that not only goes for the, you know, the safety aspect of it, but the, you know, the guys out there operating out of band or, you know, really pumping out some power to, you know, get here and there, and it, you know, it really hurts everybody.
Yeah, face it. I mean, we have limited amount of spectrum and we need to share it. And operating outside the rules that were put, the rules were put there to make the band shareable. Basically, and operating out of band, out of power limits, you might temporarily overcome a competitor, but it's going to come back and bite you in the long run.
Always will.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as far as safety goes, it's not just your safety, but the people you hire, make sure that they adhere to your safety standards, you know? If they're not going to climb the way you want, don't hire them, you know?
Yeah, I was meeting with a WISP a couple years ago, having lunch with him, and his son was up on a tower. Two sons was up on a tower, and one of them dropped a wrench. It fell about 100 feet. Justin, I think you know who I'm talking about.
Yep.
It fell about 100 feet, hit a crossbar, and went right in the guy's mouth. Mm. And, I don't know how many surgeries he had to repair his, you know, the back of his mouth and everything. So things like that can happen. Just gotta use extra care. I also know about a WISP in Texas, I believe, that had diabetes. He's about 60 years old. I don't know how many employees he had. I think it was a fairly small operation, two or three, four employees. And he climbed the tower one day and had a diabetes attack at the top.
Oh, wow.
He didn't make it back down alive.
Wow.
It took 5 to 6 hours for the emergency crew to get him down. And, you know, you got to use sense. Some things may seem like you can't afford them, but if you value your life,
yeah,
get somebody that's trained and safely trained.
Speaking
okay,
of...
Let's cheer
yeah.
up.
Yeah, that's a total downer. JJ comes in and everything just gets depressing. I don't know what it is.
Speaking of Texas, what do you see as the state with the most WISPs that you know about, Rick?
As far as membership in WISP, not necessarily membership. California, Texas, the two biggest states, have a lot.
Okay.
Illinois, I actually just researched Illinois this week. I think I have over 100 wireless ISPs in Illinois identified.
Wow.
Yeah. Indiana's got probably 60 to 70.
Okay.
The Midwest is, Ohio's got quite a few. The Midwest seems to be a hot spot for WISPs, but they're everywhere. You know, we got our first two members from Alaska in the last couple months as well. So.
Hmm. Wow.
That's cool. So does WISPA, do you guys have any members outside the states?
Yes, we do. Yeah, about 6-7 countries.
Do you have like some Puerto Rico or the Caribbean or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, I think we have 3 members in Puerto Rico, one in maybe one in Bermuda, one in the Virgin Islands, 2 or 3 in Mexico now.
No, that's cool.
Probably 20 in Canada. And then we have quite a few vendor members that are overseas, Israel, Latvia, like Microtip, and a couple of antenna manufacturers that are across the seas. And WISP of Palooza draws them from all over, too. I got people coming from Thailand, South America. I don't know. There's several countries. Where they all come from, and I have to fill out paperwork for them so they can get their visa. That's one of the main reasons I know that. So. I got to send them invitations, pretty much.
Oh, okay.
And their passport number has to be on the invitation, so forth. So.
What a pain.
It's just part of doing organizing conferences. You want people from around the globe coming to the conferences. I think it's great exposure for WISPA and the industry. You do what you have to do to get them there.
All right, price of doing business, huh? Okay. All right, man. So the second half of our segments. Now, it seems like we're doing interviews first half and then kind of a generalized topic on the second half. We've been getting a lot of questions on towers, everything to do with towers. So I sent a laundry list of questions, just kind of stuff I could come up with in 15 minutes, and sent them over to JJ and Justin because they're really my super number one WISP guys. And Justin took the time to answer questions. JJ, JJ's going to wing it because he's been tied up lately. But
I got a kind of funny tower story related to Rick. One of the first times I climbed for him, we're on a, I don't know, it was, what, about a 150, 200-foot tower. Yeah. I can't even remember where it was. But I was up there after dark.
I know where it was.
Okay. And I'm waiting on something at the bottom, and it gets dark up there, and we're in Amish country, and I see this buggy coming down the road, and I see this big blue glow from a cell phone in this Amish buggy going down the road. I thought that was just, you know, one of the neatest things. I thought that was neat.
Did you think about pretending to be God and yelling down at him? That's hilarious, man. So let's start off with the questions, and everybody jump in because you guys are far more experienced than I am. Number one on the list was definitely safety equipment, because that's really what I wanted to start, so that anybody thinking anything to do with towers would think safety equipment first. And so the first question I asked was, what are your favorite brands? And Justin said that DBI Sala, maker of the ExoFit series tower harness, is his favorite. And tell us why, Justin.
It's the Cadillac of tower harnesses. I climbed in this old, raggedy, it was actually, I think, a lineman's harness for the longest time. It was, you know, it was not a safe thing. And I actually did a tower job for a guy out of Louisiana, Johnny O. And part of my payment was this harness. And it was just, oh, man, it's got a seat on it. And I was like, man, it was like going from a bicycle to no seat to like a motorcycle.
So it's got cup holders and diapers built in.
Oh, it does everything except, you know, wipe your butt.
Oh, good times.
Or put up antennas.
So how about you, JJ? Do you have a particular maker of equipment you prefer?
As far as safety equipment?
Yeah. Well, I know you don't do a whole lot of climbing, but you get up there and strap on, right? A little bit.
Yeah, we have a 60-foot deployment that's on a large four-legged tower. There's a lot of catwalk on this tower. Well, that's a funny story in itself. We originally thought it was catwalk. This was a day one deployment for us. But come to find out, it's not catwalk, it's ice bridges. So if you go... If you go out to these towers and you see all this beautiful catwalk, take a second and say, is there ever going to be ice on this tower the size of cars? And if the answer to that question is yes, then you should probably put your antennas under it.
Under it.
yeah. So that was an interesting story. But as far as safety stuff, a lot of the climbers that we contract bring their own safety gear. So I'm not real inept on what they're exactly carrying with them. I feel terrible for not knowing that. I'm kind of always in the shack on the laptop making it work.
Yes, you're just the guy that points the direction to over there and do that thing.
Yeah.
So next question was, what gear is a necessity? What do you consider necessary? And Justin said, number one, safety harness, good selection of carabiners, dual fall arrestor hooks, good pair of boots with steel shanks in them, which is the most ridiculous thing that Justin has ever said, if you know anything about it. Because he's got about 1,000 pictures on Facebook of him wearing the rattiest, nastiest Nikes 200 foot up on a tower.
Seen those, yeah.
So those must be steel-toed Nikes, I guess is what he's saying, which I didn't even realize they made.
After this week, I think you need steel knee pads.
Yes, I need some kind of knee pads, I think.
Yeah. And that's just another example of what can happen. I mean, you're climbing down and you snag your knee on a cable clamp and cut it down to the bone practically, and you've probably climbed that tower 20 times. And
yeah, I've been on that tower several times.
So it's just
one of those unexpected things, you never know what's going to happen, huh?
Yeah. I was thinking back to your first question. I was kind of thinking, you need to have good rope, good hoisting rope. That yellow nylon strand stuff, that just doesn't cut it.
You still there, JJ?
Yeah, I'm still here.
How about you, Justin?
I think Google had a hiccup there for a second.
Yeah, I think we lost Rick for a second there. Rick, we know here are you. So he was saying about rope, I'm assuming he means a good climber's rope. I know if you go to Harbor Freight, they have what appears to be climber's rope, but if you look in the middle of it, it's actually got like styrofoam in the middle. So I don't know that I would exactly trust my life to that.
Can you hear me now?
And yep, you are back, sir. You were talking about rope.
Yeah, I was talking about rope, and you're exactly right. You need to know what's in the inside. All climbing and hoisting rope has ratings on how much weight it can carry. And the stiffness of it, you don't want to get rope that's too stiff that you can't do anything with. The other thing I said when I lost my microphone was hornet spray.
Hornet spray, yeah.
No, I'm serious. Justin, have you ever been on a tower and you got attacked by bees?
I haven't been attacked, but I've been on towers with bees.
Yeah, you get down south and they have problems with, I don't know what kind of bird it is, some kind of bird that nests up on the tower, and they'll attack you too. So, lots of things can happen.
Go ahead, JJ.
A guy get the bee problem before he pulled a raid on him, and there it was.
So. Oh, hanging out right. I guess you had some attenuation.
Well, we had some ESD based attenuation. So.
I know for me, I've gone up a tower when it wasn't too windy, and there was a shield at the bottom of the ladder. And when I was coming down, the shield had banged over to the side, it was rattling a little bit, and there just happened to be a hornet's nest right next to it. So that was kind of interesting. So I took my hat off and
swatted
him, and then ran up the ladder as fast as I could and waited for like 10 minutes and then made my escape.
We have a problem with bears in a couple of sots.
Bears.
Really?
Bears. They're very remote sots, and apparently bears are trained to destroy any square box that looks like it was made by a human. So we have this problem with all of our batteries and our solar panels. They just go up there and lean up on the solar panels, and they'll climb anything. So it don't matter how high you have this stuff. We were like, oh yeah, we know. We'll put the batteries up on top of a 4x4 post with all the solar panels at the top, and then the antennas. This is top of a mountain. It's in clear cut, so we have plenty of solar exposure, and we just have push up poles for the antennas. Because it's very remote, and we have to ride into this area with a four-wheeler. So bears. You know, who would have thought of that? But I couldn't imagine being up here and then a bear just come running out of the woods at me. So we carry pepper spray with us when we're up here. So the big industrial like cop version that something like you'd see a dog the bounty hunter carrying. Yeah.
So I know when I first got it started, and you mentioned it, Justin, was dual fall arresters. Definitely get those so you're 100% tied off. That's always been my rule. If you've got, I always tell people, if you've got kids at home or anybody that depends on you or you kind of care about your life, 100% tie off. Also, JJ told me about these nice, short, little hip tie-offs so that whenever you're actually on the ladder and you want to tie off and kind of sit down in your seat, you crank off on those guys as well and you can sit. That was like a revelation for me. Like, I could actually relax for a half a second while I was up there. It was amazing.
Yep, nice positioning hooks are a good thing. Positioning, I learned from
I should say clippy thingy.
I learned from a tower guy years ago. He said, you're not going to fall off the tower if you're hooked to it. You might die another way, but you're not going to fall.
Yeah.
However, you need to know that the tower's sound.
Yes.
I've had guys climb towers and they get all the way to the top and then it moves two or three feet from one side or another. and it's not the wind blowing. It's bolts that are sloppy further down the tower, and you could be clipped on the tower could collapse. So.
Yeah, tower falls over with you.
Every time I watch a guy cut a top of a tree out, and he's hanging up there, and he cuts the top out of it, and then the top falls out, that's probably a couple thousand pounds of weight just dislocating from, a shaft sticking up in the air. And so these guys are swinging back and forth like 6 feet side to side when the top of that tree comes out. And I'm just like, I can't
do it. Do they yell yeehaw while they're riding it?
Pretty much. They drop the chainsaw and hold on, The chainsaw is like on their belt.
So. Yeah, that reminds me, Justin was talking about how there was a guy who used to push his tower over with a bulldozer and didn't tell him that until Justin had climbed the tower already.
I'm climbing up this tower, and it's a 180-foot tower. This guy owns a construction company. I'm climbing up the tower, and it's got, like, missing pegs, and it's some of the cross members are bent, and, I get up there, I do my thing, get down, and so what's the story on this tower? Oh, I get out my front-end loader, and I put it up about 60 feet, and I lay over the tower. Like, your tower's not really designed to do that. It's like, yeah, we kind of stopped when it bent a little. I'm like, okay.
You told me that ahead of time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Criminally. All right, so let's see. Tools. What are your favorite tools? Justin says, again, with the ExoFit harness. Apparently, he's getting a sponsorship. what are your favorite tools to kind of have with you? For me, my necessity is I always have my Leatherman. I've had the same Leatherman Wave since 2002, and I feel naked if I don't have it. So even when I'm naked, I just hold it in my hand and walk around. And but to me, that's my must-have tool. What's yours, Justin?
I love the ratchet wrenches. Those things, Craftsman makes them. They make some cheapy ones. Those are like the best invention ever because you're up there hanging around and you're usually working in a tight space and, having to undo the wrench all the time is usually a pain, but having those ratchet wrenches, it saves a ton of time.
Yeah, we use those quad boxes. So they call them, I think Gear Wrench makes them. They call them quad boxes. And you can carry 8 wrenches wherever, and you've got 16. It's one of the greatest things ever. And if you can't see something, you just put it on there and crank it down, and you got it. Another tool that I use religiously is my cell phone, believe it or not. If I have any kind of service, I'll VPN into our network and use it to aim antennas. So I'll log into the antenna as soon as it's associated, and bam, there I go. I've got a portable... aiming apparatus, so as long as I can get a little bit of data through, even if I'm on an edge network, 100K or something.
Tools are so much better than they were when I started.
So what's your must-have tool these days, Rick? I guess that would be a laptop?
A bottle opener when I get down? No, I don't climb anymore.
Yeah, okay. And I know Justin's talking about the ratchet wrenches. I like those too, because a lot of times by the time I make it up a tower, it's so infrequent that I do that I have like the claw hands. Yeah. So they don't want to open and close a lot at first. It takes a little while to get them going again, so those are awesome.
An amazing tool for us is tape. Just the greatest thing ever.
But you know, I hope none of your customers ever watch this, JJ, because you are far too honest. I'd duct tape that radio to your roof.
No, they see it. We do good work.
Yeah, I know. Just playing. So Justin says, what do you consider a necessity to keep on you? And Justin's saying that automatic knife is Boker automatic.
Yeah, where is my knife? I had it. There it is. Yeah, this is my baby here.
Right.
One-handed operation.
One-handed
operation. You know, if you're hanging off a tower, if you're in any kind of situation where you're tied up with something, you can always cut yourself out. You know, I've been on tower situations where the ropes actually, kind of wrapped around me and due to high winds, and it got a little scary.
Another good thing to have in your toolbox is these guys' phone numbers.
No, JJ only calls when he needs something. He doesn't say hello anymore. He just immediately picks up and asks me a question and hangs up.
Because you're like, I don't have time for you. So I just get it out.
You're going there with it, huh? That's what you're going to do.
You went the other way, so.
All right, so next on the list was kind of like ropes and pulleys, winches, anything like that. You know, what do you guys use for that?
Embedded Linux.
Embedded Linux.
Oh. Well, I said winches. I also said barmaids. I thought that would be kind of clever.
Bazing.
Bazing. So I know a guy I've climbed with before. He had like a 700-foot rope that he just in case, he had like just a bag with a 700-foot rope. Do you guys keep anything special like that?
What was it, like yo-yo string? How do you get a 700-foot rope?
He ordered it online from some climbing company. Like, it apparently came off like a 10,000-foot spool, or that's what he told me anyway. But it was a huge bag full of rope.
We used to have an 800-foot section of rope. It was 5/8. Justin, you may have used it once or twice. It was really stiff. That's why I made the mention about the stiff rope. We used to store that in an Army ammo box. It sounds strange, but you can pick those up at an Army surplus store, and you just kind of lay the rope back and forth in that Army box, and you can get a lot of rope in there. There's tricks to putting it in there so it doesn't tangle up, too.
And Go ahead, JJ.
We have a 500-foot rope that we keep on a spool, and we always find some, a rod or something, and feed it off the spool up the towers. It's a large industrial spool that I think some cable came on at one point. This is it's probably a 1-inch rope that we use for hoisting. Because we'll do the whole boom on the ground and then we'll hoist it up. So,
Justin, I remember Johnny O taking down some of those big old cornucopia dishes. You remember that?
Yep.
That was cable, wasn't it?
Yeah, he actually had a real double drum winch he borrowed with 3/8-inch steel cable on them. Those things weighed 2,000 or 3,000 pounds a piece.
Wow.
You know, when you took those off the tower, the whole tower actually kind of moved around a little.
Good night.
There's a tower that we're on. They had to replace the top antenna. The top had with a new HD antenna. We're co-located with a TV station, and they had to set that antenna with a helicopter because there's no ground access to this particular site. So it was interesting getting to witness that. And that it's reported that antenna weighs something in the order of like 2 tons.
Yeah, I believe it.
And I seen the email that passed around about the RF meters. We do use one when we're co-located with a high-powered TV station or an FM station. I've seen too many of these old-timer ham radio guys that have been these station engineers for years and years and years, and they're blind now. Off the top of my head, of my ham radio mentors, I know three of them that are just blind as a bat, and they were all at some point in their career station engineers. Because back in the 50s, they just didn't know anything about exposure limits and things like that. So they were just right in the front of these, you know, 50, you know, ERP, probably 50, 60, 120 megawatts, and just blasting in the face.
Yeah. I was talking to an old-timer that was a Navy guy, and he worked on a communication station, and he ended up dying of cancer, and he attributed it to the fact that one of the big microwave links, when they were guarding it in the winter, they would stand in front of it for a minute to heat up, and then they would move back out of the way. But, you know, yeah, people they didn't really know back then.
Well, even if you're co-located on an FM tower, if that FM station's putting out, 6,000 watts, I think, or something like that, and you have to climb close to that antenna, even if you're not there very long, your teeth can get hot from the cavity fillings, and you want to know what's on the tower between you and your antenna and what the power safe decline or the power limits that the station's put down. You know, you want to know what's safe.
We actually have to lower the power
to get them to turn it down.
Yeah, we have to have them turn the transmitter down at this one site every time we climb it, just because exposure limits, even at the level that we're at, we're about 80 feet below their emitters.
Yeah.
And we still have, they have to turn it down to about quarter power for us to get near the tower. Or, you know, our monitors just go insane.
So. Something else you probably wouldn't think about is there's some guys that are home-based out of here, and on one of the top of the buildings that we have equipment on, they actually do free space optics. So they're shooting lasers. So it looks like Johnny Five Heads, but they've got high-powered lasers pumping out of those things and no warning signs or anything. You know, so when we bring somebody new up there, you have to say, okay, don't look at these things. You know, don't stare into them. You know, and you would have absolutely no idea, you know, so there's just hazards abound.
Yeah.
Usually don't see lasers on towers because there's too much wind movement, but on building tops,
I've never seen a laser.
Yeah, it's for a reason. They don't work that great.
Okay.
They really don't. They're terrible. That's why I didn't mention their name. I don't want any bad blood. All right, so let's see. One thing that probably one of the last ones, because we're nearing kind of our hour, would be grounding. And I don't know if you guys want to kind of jump too much into this. We might be able to save a little bit for next time. But, you know, how do you properly ground a tower? Do you ground your equipment at the top and the bottom? Just at the bottom? Do you use lightning suppression? What do you guys do?
Well, we kind of, with Zig, we kind of, you know, picked up a couple tricks from Rick and kind of ran with that. Our theory is, you know, we don't actually ground anything. We do full DC up the tower out of batteries, run fiber optics up the tower, since there's no, what we see most of the time is the quote lightning strike comes in from the utility side. You know, transformer blows or something comes through the utility and actually goes up the tower trying to find a path out. You know, very rarely, I think, do we see, you know, lightning hit the tower and come down. So if there's no path going up that tower, the equipment, equipment's pretty much isolated. We had a tower, had an FM radio station, two other WISPs, two-way radio. Something happened to it, we're pretty sure came in through the utility side, took out everybody else's gear, took out the lighting on the tower, everything. All we had to do is replace our little battery charger at the bottom, which was plugged into the utility side. Now, you know, granted, Mother Nature's going to do whatever Mother Nature's going to do, but, you know, if you make it less attractive to her, like, you know, the ugly guy at the bar, then... You know, maybe you can save your equipment, and you know, most of the towers that we try to deploy on these days are commercial towers that already have, you know, really good ground planes. You know, they've invested a lot of money to ground that tower.
One of the tricks I used to use when I had a lot of Ethernet cables going up the tower was to protect the Ethernet going both ways. In other words, basically going back to back with some surge protectors, because a surge protector is going to protect one way, and then you turn the other surge protector basically right next to it going the other way. So that kind of protects the surges from coming up the tower and the lightning strike from going down the tower and damaging equipment that way.
Cool. Yeah. How about you, JJ? What do you guys do?
We were fighting that very thing tonight. So we had a pretty aggressive storm come through lately. So between the bears and the lightning, I've not seen much of anything other than sights. But we do ground everything. That was kind of lesson number one that we learned. You know, we put out thousands and thousands of dollars of hardware. At the time, it was canopy. And it just got vaporized. And we couldn't figure out why, and we were on the phone with the canopy people, and finally we figured out that, hey, you know, you got to ground this stuff properly. It was hypersensitive to it all. And on the towers, like Justin said, a lot of the sites we deploy on are already established commercial installations that have very good grounding. We don't really run a floating ground. We try to ground everything basically at straight out of the ARRL handbook. We tried the floating ground thing for us. It just didn't work. I don't know if it's just all the humidity in the southeast. You're basically grounded to the tower anyway, no matter if you isolate or not. But a car runs a floating ground, but if it's grounded to anything else, it'll transfer it. But we do the DC trick like you guys are doing. With running everything off batteries, we find that it works really good. And we got a little gadget that we use that monitors the voltage of the towers. That way we know. We also use a little hack that Greg came up with, a little relay, except couldn't get the relays to work exactly right according to his blog post, so I have to use an actual Ethernet device. I just plug it into grid power, and then he can put the link to it in the show notes. It's a little gadget that will tell you via email when grid power is down. Because we have a lot of sites that do have genset, but we don't have any way to know when we're running on it. So we could sit up there and run hundreds and hundreds of gallons of fuel out and never even know, and the power go off anyway. So what was the point in having the genset if you don't have a way to know if it's on or if it's off, or if you're running on grid or if you're not? So we ran into that scenario where, you know, a generator's up there doing its thing, and we had one that flung all the oil out of it because it sat up and ran for, it was like 840 hours that this generator ran until it ran out of fuel. It had like a 4,000-gallon in-ground tank on it of natural gas, I think, or, I don't know, propane. I think it was propane. And it just burnt all of it and then had no oil. And it shut down when it had like 15 gallons left. This little Subaru engine that just sat there and ran for, nobody knows how long, because grid power was probably down for, 800 and some hours, at least. And then everything goes offline, and you're like, I'll go up there and see what's going on. So that's some of the scenarios that I've ran into with generators, if you're not careful.
If you're going on a new site, it doesn't hurt to have an electrician go check the grounding on the tower. You can ground your equipment on the tower as good as anybody, but if the tower's not grounded properly, it's to no avail. So I've seen some freaky things happen when towers have bad grounding systems.
Yeah. My main tower right now is a water tower. So it's got huge steel pipes going into the ground, so it's doing pretty good. Plus, they've got additional grounding off of opposite ends of the legs, too. So this guy's really...
Is it got like those fuzzy metal balls?
No, it doesn't. Well, I don't know. I've never climbed to the tip top. I'm not quite that brave. But but around the sides, they don't have them. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. So I think that's probably about as much as we can squeeze in. So right here at the end, I like to just kind of go around and let everybody say what they've been doing, maybe since the last time we talked, anything interesting, as well as what are you going to be doing this next week? And I think everybody here, I'm not sure about you, Rick, but everybody's got kind of a common destination. So, JJ, do you want to start?
Sure. I'm just going to keep putting my network back together from the storm. No, we're back up to 100% as of tonight. But this coming week, I've been entrenched in a hotspot, a municipal hotspot project, and some Python programming with the BeagleBone. I'm still hooked on that. I hate you, Greg. no, I'm just kidding. We sold some vaporware, and now we had to produce it. And
you've got to quit saying this stuff on this cast.
So, no, we produced it. The customer's happy. We installed it last Wednesday. They did a run of it this past weekend. It was for a festival ground. At the peak of it, we seen about 111 users on this hotspot network that we put in.
Nice.
The software is still not finished with the voucher implementation, but we were able to do a free click-through for the event users, and it went down because there's AT&T is crappy out there. So it was basically iPhone. Like, we were looking at the MAC addresses, and every MAC address was an iDevice. So you'd get the occasional Android or Windows 7 because we were doing the browser historicals too. So, but fun times. We also did a project for the local fair. So I've just not stopped. So, and this coming week's going to be the same thing. So, we got a 3G traffic counter project that we were also working on. So we're going to be counting cars for the local municipality using a BeagleBone and a 3G dongle plugged into the USB port. Cool. So, yeah, that was the latest thing. They said, well, you know, you're monitoring the batteries, you can just count cars. And we said, sure, why not?
There's an app for that.
Yeah, there is now.
They actually put a 4-foot box over there and then just put a midget inside. He just sits there with his
one,
chip.
One, two, three.
There you go. This guy's a baseball counter.
So that's right, what Justin. We got going on.
When you going to New Orleans, JJ?
Yeah, dude, don't forget.
Kim and I are leaving Tuesday afternoon. She has a limited number of days off. She's not one of the 4-year veterans of the company yet, so she doesn't get to take off. Quickly approaching, though. But we'll be down like Tuesday evening or Wednesday morning.
Okay.
I think we're going to be done Wednesday morning. So, I think you guys are going to be down like Sunday or something.
Yeah. Hey, Justin. So, what's your you did this week, and then what do you got next week?
Let's see. I climbed a couple towers. Came down with the bird flu, I think. I was sick in bed for about 2 or 3 days. Had a web server go down for a telephone company over in eastern Indiana today, so I dealt with that. Other than that, not a whole lot I can say just yet. should have some exciting news soon, hopefully. Mike Hammett and I are driving down to the MUM. I think his train's going to get in Tuesday. So we should be there probably late Wednesday afternoon. We're going to stay, I think he has to be back sometime Sunday. Okay. So I haven't decided. We might drive the new Firebird. I don't know. Depends on if anybody else goes.
So you guys going to be there in time for the Wednesday afternoon mixer thingamajig?
Yeah, we're going to, if it's about a 13-hour drive for us. So
if we leave it for us, so.
If we leave at 10:30 at night on Tuesday, we should be there, you know, by mid to late afternoon at the most.
Yeah, on the way back from the Ubiquity thing in Chicago, I got behind Justin or in front of Justin on the way back, and he was the only guy in, you know, Indiana with North Carolina plates. So he's like, "That's got to be JJ. I'm going to call him." And sure enough, it was. And we drove all the way back home that night. It was like a 13-hour
drive. Yeah, it'd be a killer drive for you.
So, all right, Rick, you're next.
Okay, I'm next. Well, I'm just going to continue working on Wispapalooza, building that, taking care of details with my associate Trina. And next week, I go to Chicago on Tuesday to speak at the Cambium Networks open house. I think they got some big announcements at that. And then...
Half Cross.
Huh?
I said Half Cross.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And then I leave Chicago on Wednesday and go down to Alabama. I got to speak at a conference in at Tuskegee University on Thursday.
Give us the Wispalooza dates again and the website.
October 22nd, 23rd. The easiest way for you to get to it. I can't tell you the URL off the top of my head because it's weird. Is just go to WISPA website and click on Wispapalooza 2012, and that takes you to the registration website.
Very cool. And then the post will put up a link to all that good stuff as well.
And I can't close the cast out without saying something. EdgeMax launched on the Ubiquity website this week.
I saw that.
They have it's the best little video that they've made.
Yes, the video is good.
It's hilarious. The first time I watched that video, I'd just done an install and I went to go get some firmware, and so I bust out laughing.
I was confused. I was like, "Is this a fan made video or is this legit? What's the deal here?"
Right? It's like Roundhouse kicking the, you know, the CYSCO guys in the face.
Yeah. hilarious.
Man. Not quite yet.
All right. So let's see. What did I do?
You guys are doing a good thing here. I want to thank you for having me come on the show today.
It was a pleasure having you. Yes. Definitely, man. And hopefully we can, you know, have you pop back in every now and then, give us some updates. And, tell us more funny nicknames that Justin has. Okay, let's see. One last round of things. Next week, the Brothers Wisp is going to do a live cast from the MUM. We're all going to be there. Justin on Thursday is doing a presentation. I think immediately after that I'm doing a presentation. So I get to finish out the day. So by the time everybody's brains are melted, then I get to go. JJ is going to be there for moral support. So Rick, are you guys going to have any representatives there this year?
Yeah. Chuck Hoggs will be at MUM and maybe another board member. I'm not really sure. But Chuck Hoggs, the main one.
Okay. Cool. And we've been trying to get Chuck on the cast for a while. He's just, he's too fancy for us.
I thought he might be here tonight. But.
Yeah, and he was actually I guess we just couldn't sync up, which is okay. We'll get him on here eventually.
Chuck's the new treasurer on the board, and he's getting ready to do some cool things for the members from the mapping side, and also he's going to create a vendor portal, kind of like a line card of different vendors or all their products. So if you want RF armor, those things, and you don't know where the distributors are that handle those, you type in that, and it'll show you all the different distributors that handle that product or billing software or whatever. So he's going to make it easier for especially startup lists that don't know the different vendors and the manufacturers and what their products are, an easy way for them to find those. So I'm kind of excited about that. So Chuck's doing some great things for Whisper right now.
Very cool. All right. So as always, thank you guys so much. Any questions, comments, please leave us some feedback because we desperately crave your approval. And once more, thank you so much, Rick.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.